United Lutheran Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast, conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more, with voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Suicide, a national tragedy. Hello, I'm Jerry Christensen, and this is the Seminary Explores. Suicide is a concern of Dr. Margaret Swartz, our guest today. She's a clinical psychologist in private practice with Yorland Psychological Associates of York, Pennsylvania, and she is going to tell us something about how extensive this problem is, what the characteristics are so we can help spot it in ourselves or in others, and some steps we can take to at least address it, if not actually alleviate it. How extensive is this really terrible tragedy? Terrible for the persons involved, terrible for the persons around them.
Yeah, it's fairly, unfortunately, fairly common, more common in some areas than others. The statistics that I have, they're getting a little old. They're from 2010. And in the overall civilian population, about a little over 12 individuals per 100,000 complete suicide, 19 per 100,000 for men. And in our military population, this is a statistic from 2012, 29 per 100,000. Those are full-time military.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a very high number.
Yeah, yeah.
It is the third leading cause for death for 15 to 24-year-olds. It's generally the 10th leading cause of death. The overwhelming majority are with firearms. Up to 55% of completed suicides are with firearms.
Mm-hmm.
We could, in another piece, is that it's 4 to 1 men to women. So men are way more lethal, way more lethal than women. A lot of people are surprised to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
And 73% of all suicide deaths are white males. 80% of all firearm suicide deaths are white males.
Okay.
And here's something that most people are really very, very shocked to hear. Generally across the United States, it is death by firearms is 2 to 1 suicide over homicide. It's a very lethal situation to have a white, depressed man. Actually, generally, they are older. We put a lot of emphasis, very upset about the teen and young adult group, but in fact, our most lethal population are older adult men, like above 40, 40 to 65, roughly, who own a gun, own a handgun, or own any kind of gun, but a handgun, and they are very depressed and will kill themselves. Mm-hmm. So that's really the bulk of who we're talking about.
We're going to talk about characteristics in a moment, but I'm stunned by the fact that it's mostly men. And of course, we've seen in the newspapers about the military. And I don't know that that is being resolved, but it certainly has been addressed. But this thing about the high level of white males committing suicide. You know, and the other thing we haven't mentioned here in these stats is the extent of the tragedy goes well beyond the individual, but to the families that
probably
have dealt with. Wives, husbands, wives, well, could be husbands too. Wife, husbands, children, extended family, and their
absolutely.
The load of guilt and other things that they carry with them for this.
Absolutely. I'm currently working with a family member who of someone who completed suicide, and this person, my current client, was a family member, a sister of someone who completed suicide. So, it's
that carries on for years.
Yes.
York, Pennsylvania, central Pennsylvania, is primarily rural.
Right.
Is there a difference there between urban and rural? In any case, I'd like to know what we know about
right.
rural
well, we,
suicide.
Well, we know here in, you know, we're sitting in Adams County, Pennsylvania, and in 2016, we had a total of 16 suicides. To my knowledge, I don't think we had any homicides, but I might be wrong, okay? Mm-hmm. Here in Adams County, if we have a homicide, it's maybe one or two a year, if that. 12 of those individuals died by gunshot, and 12 were males.
Mm-hmm.
Four were females.
Mm-hmm.
And in that year, the ages ranged. We did have a 15-year-old who died that year, and the eldest who died was 75.
Mm-hmm.
So that gets you sort of a sense. Another piece is that of that group here in Adams County, and this is something that does show up in other across the country, but in this particular group, 50% of those who committed suicide had drug or alcohol in their system.
Oh,
so they were not sober.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was also, mm-hmm. This is at the same time that there were no suicides identified as overdose that year in this area.
So they may have been using the drug of choice to prepare themselves for a...
Well, or very often, I think it's fair to say that these individuals do use drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm. On a regular basis, yes.
That's sort of a contributing factor. That's mm-hmm. something that's going mm-hmm. on with them.
Mm-hmm.
And individuals who are under the influence of something, I mean, it's not uncommon, people under the influence becoming very suicidal.
Mm.
And that's really kind of a piece. Like if they were sober, they maybe would be depressed, maybe would be bummed out, but they wouldn't be suicidal. That you introduce that and it sort of throws them over the edge,
mm-hmm.
as it were.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
So, I want to go on to ask you about characteristics, Margaret, but I don't want to get off with this general picture of the extent of the tragedy. But
right.
When you if you have told us enough about those, I'm really interested in what we know about suicides. What can we spot in ourselves and in others? And I wanted also and make a second question at the same time. The overlap between actual suicide, taking one's life, finally, and then self-harm. So a lot is going into this.
Okay, so let me just start with mm-hmm. sort of self-harm,
okay.
and for that matter, even morbid thinking, okay,
mm-hmm.
and actual suicide mm-hmm. stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, there are a whole lot of reasons. Usually it's something that happens with younger individuals, teens, usually by 20s, it subsides a lot. But individuals who use self-injury in some form to, if you will, regulate their emotions. And they very often are not suicidal. So they're cutting, burning, headbanging. Mm-hmm. You know, they're doing a number of different things deliberately to cause mm-hmm. pain. They're in, and it has this kind of... this effect of actually help calming them. For some people it works, you know. Mm. For some people it doesn't work.
Mm.
But they're not suicidal. I mean, you can have individuals who engage in self-harm, deliberate self-injurious mm-hmm. behavior, mm-hmm. and they are in an overlap of some suicidal thinking, but not necessarily. There is that piece. We do find that a certain group of individuals with very serious psychiatric diagnoses, such as bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, borderline personality disorder, obviously depression, and anxiety, as well as forms of addiction. People who have been given those diagnoses, certainly suicidal thinking becomes a more power, you know, more likely. It's mm-hmm. more likely part of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
But amongst, you know, a lot of times when people do this, when they complete a suicide, people will, you know, why? And and they may point to some unfortunate kind of life situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to say all situations are really different. So there are individuals who are in a psychotic state, they're hearing voices, and the voices are commanding that they kill themselves, okay? But many people who are not psychotic, not hearing voices, they still have some other things going on. And one of the things, ways we like to look at it is what we call core skill deficits. In other words, they don't have coping skills in order to help them be able to handle certain things. So things that they are weak on is emotional dysregulation. So when they become upset, sad, fearful, angry, any kind of a negative emotion, they just don't know what to do to help themselves get out of that negative emotion state. Along with this, it sort of makes sense, goes hand in hand with this, is poor emotional awareness. So I have a lot of people, they will, instead of saying I'm fearful, they'll just jump to using the word anxiety. And I find myself a lot of times, okay, let's call fear fear, let's call anger anger, let's call sad sad, you know, and helping people to really label those emotions. They just, they're experiencing the emotions. We all experience emotions, but they're fuzzy about that. They're not real clear.
They can't identify them. They can't cope with them. That's the word you're using.
Yes, they can't cope with them. Difficulty tolerating intimacy. It's hard to be close with other people. That's difficult for them. An inability to ask for help when they are experiencing the things that they're experiencing, including suicidal thoughts, but even just super upset. They're not very good at being able to say to someone, hey, I'm feeling horrible, I need help. Poor problem solving. So they get into situations that the solution is to problem solve, to think through, okay, what do I need to do about this situation? They just don't seem to know what to do about the situation. They can't problem solve. What we call interpersonal dysfunction, poor social problem solving. So not only are they unable to solve their own problems, they also have some difficulty interacting with other people and problem solving with other people. In other words, relationship problems. They're not able to navigate relationships. They may, for example, go from one kind of chaotic, explosive emotional relationship to another, and A, not see the pattern, and B, not know how to navigate and solve problems out of it. So, and then finally, a lot of shame and guilt. Just they experience a lot of shame and guilt. Yeah. Those emotions are very dominant.
They get magnified out of proportion. We all have shame and guilt, but they don't know how to cope with
exactly.
This will go away, or I can do something about
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
We're talking to Dr. Margaret Schwartz about a very important American tragedy, a human tragedy called suicide. Dr. Schwartz is a clinical psychologist with Yorland Psychological Associates in New York. I'm Jerry Christensen, and we're pleased that you're listening today to the Seminary Explorers. Before we ask about what can we do about this, any reason why we can think it's higher among males and females, or either we got any handle on the military, is this statistic going up? Is it increasing?
I'll answer more about the male over females.
Okay.
First of all, I think in our society, our culture allows women to voice their emotional distress in a way that they're discouraged from showing emotion. They're discouraged from
don't be a crybaby.
There you go. Don't be a crybaby. Exactly. It's that kind of thing.
Okay.
So if someone early on is being trained not to acknowledge their emotions. And if you're not being trained to acknowledge your emotions and then be taught what to do about your emotions, then this leads to the situation where you don't know your emotions, you don't know what to do about them, you don't know how to resolve things. I think that part of the reason that males over females is that, like I already said, women will seek therapy, I think, more than men.
Yes.
And I think that way more men own guns than women.
Mm-hmm,
And since we know that handguns are used so much more on the self and for suicide than for any other purpose.
Yes.
And they are predominantly owned by men.
Mm-hmm.
The lethal thing is a white guy with a gun.
Yeah.
Killing himself.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. Putting it not very delicately, but directly.
Yeah.
What kind of steps can we take when we recognize this in other persons, or think we recognize it in ourselves or in other persons?
Okay. First of all, I think that one of the biggest myths that we need to just bust right now is that asking someone if they are suicidal, that implants the idea. People think this stuff up all on their own.
And don't mention it, because then they'll do it, huh?
Right. No. And so we want to do exactly the opposite.
Okay.
Exactly the opposite is if someone's seems depressed, is isolating themselves, maybe they're not eating so much. You're aware of the depression. Then it becomes really important to ask, are you thinking of hurting yourself? Are you thinking of killing yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people gag on saying those things, and yet this is the most basic thing that can be asked, because the moment then they are asked, you are giving permission for that person to now share it, share what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And the next step is to know that the next place to go is to wherever the local emergency department is. All hospital emergency departments are prepared to help people who are feeling suicidal. If they don't have staff, the bigger hospitals, they have crisis workers. These are trained people, paid people. These aren't volunteers, paid professionals. The number one thing they're trained in, besides just interacting with people, is to do a suicide assessment. What to ask, how to ask it, drawing this information from people, and the idea is to get someone to an emergency department. Here locally in this area, we actually have a mobile crisis unit that will come to the school, to your home, to your business, to the doctor's office. They will come. I cannot say how common that is across the country, but I can say here in central Pennsylvania, we do have a mobile crisis, which is super helpful, because I've had some individuals who, having crisis come to the office has been a way to very quickly get them connected to help. And then very often individuals need to be hospitalized for a few days. Now, there also is a suicide hotline.
Yes.
And that number is,
if nothing else, then reach for the telephone.
Reach for the telephone.
And the number is?
The number is 1-800-273-TALK or 8255.
You're holding something in your hand. It looks familiar to me. Where have I seen that? I don't want to admit where I've seen it before. You'll have to tell me where I may have seen it before, but I'm making no admission.
Okay, this is a local initiative that here in Adams County, we have tried to reach out for this population, sort of taking that piece about the alcohol and older men. And this is a drink coaster that we have. Last fall, we distributed 5,000 of these to bars throughout the area. So that would be
coffee
here.
Shops.
Oh, that's the coffee, coffee shops. We've also got it in the coffee
Thank you,
shops.
Margaret.
We have. Oh yeah, that made it sound like Jerry's hitting all the bars in the coffee shops. Yes, a coffee shop has very kindly printed the same information. What's on here is the logo from the Suicide Prevention Lifeline with the phone number. And in the coffee shop, they put the same information on their coffee sleeves and several thousands of those. They actually have three locations around the area and through the month of September.
And the logo is, you are not alone.
You are not alone.
And with the phone number, which is 800-273-TALK.
Right.
And that will help get things started if one even feels the need to talk to someone. And this can be done anonymously, too, which
absolutely
can help the guy
yes.
with the big ego.
And another piece of this, which is super duper helpful, is when folks, wherever they are in the country, call this number, the suicide prevention hotline folks have the ability to connect with the local crisis center in a person's area. So they will try to find out where you are.
The number is 800-273-TALK or 8255, 800-273-TALK. And our guest has been Dr. Margaret Swartz. She is a clinical psychologist in Yorland Psychological Associates of York, Pennsylvania. We've talked about a national tragedy, suicide. I'm Jerry Christensen for the Seminary Explorers. Have a very good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores, a production of United Lutheran Seminary with campuses in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We invite you to visit our website at unitedlutheranseminary.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of United Lutheran Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.